Thanks for listening to the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 12 to 3 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Doug Gottlieb Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio.
What up, Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. Man, we got a lot to get to. Wait to hear some of Andre Iguodala's comments, including why Mark Jackson is not coaching in the NBA. We'll get to that later on in the show. Man, we got a lot to get to. Doug Gottlieb Show is brought to you by Farmers. At Farmers, we've seen almost everything, so we know how to cover almost anything. When it's game time, have an experienced player help you stay ahead of the game. Put their experience into play at farmers.com.
We are Farmers. Bum, bum,
bum, bum, bum. Not a crazy night in the world of sports. Not crazy. But it did give us the NBA awards show, which, you know, had some highs, had some lows. I don't really get the Jay Pharoah Shaq imitation. Like, we get it. You think Shaq's cross-eyed. And Shaq's a low talker, but it wasn't anything profound in terms of imitations. What I do think is fascinating, Clay Travis is going to join us upcoming in 15 minutes, and we'll discuss this. I guess it's a controversy. It felt like a non-controversy where Adam Silver is falling in line with Draymond Green in cutting out the word owner from NBA teams. Clay has his thoughts. I'll share with you mine. Frank Isola from The Athletic and SiriusXM NBA Radio will join us. Mark Schlereth will join us. He just re-signed a contract with Fox. Can't wait to talk some football with him. Wait to hear what Amari Cooper had to say about Dak Prescott. So we got a lot to get to. But I watched the NBA awards show, and look, the two things of value in sport in programming today are live events and award shows, which are kind of like live events, right? You can't, they're non-DVRable. It's one of the great things that we still have with terrestrial radio. By the way, if you're wondering what terrestrial radio, it's probably what you're listening to me on in your car, like regular radio waves. That's terrestrial radio. The thing that we have above podcasts, and we have a podcast, you can pod this show. The Doug Gottlieb Show every day. We have the best of as well. And then we have an all-ball podcast as well. All basketball, all the time. But the difference is, like, this is live. This is right now. So if the Netherlands are beaten by Japan in Women's World Cup, this is your place, huh, to discuss the coaching acumen of the Japanese head coach. No, but seriously, when things go down, we have immediacy. We're live. We can pivot. Whereas once you put it in the can, the podcast, it's great. On the other hand, it's dated from the second you record it, because even when you do a live one, it's not broadcast live. It then has to be edited and then blasted out, and that takes time. And a lot can change. So award shows make sense because they make money, and they make money because they're non-DVRable. Much like live sporting events make money. But I watched last night's NBA awards, and I realized something. It's not that Giannis didn't give a heartfelt speech. He did. It's not that he didn't have a great regular season. He did. It's that I think we would all conclude that Giannis Antetokounmpo, though a great story, and though incredibly valuable to the Milwaukee Bucks with the best record in the NBA in the regular season, he is not, in fact, the best player in the NBA. Now, maybe he is, maybe he isn't. But I thought to myself, why not continue to evolve the NBA award show? See, the hardest thing about these award shows is you create new categories. I mean, hell, the Olympics are continuing to evolve. They just, now they want breakdancing to be a sport. How many of my friends that watch Breaking It as a kid are sitting there going like, man, I was born too late. Breakdancing is a sport. All right. I mean, I guess. Is pole dancing going to be a sport as well? Like, ladies in Vegas are like sitting there going like, I sure hope so. She's an Olympian, and she works at the Spearmint Rhino. Can she maintain her amateur status since she is, you know, only doing it to put herself through medical school? Anyway. The hardest part about the Oscars, the Emmys, is those award shows have been around for 100 years. And getting them to change what they do and how they do it, really, really hard. The NBA award show has been around for a couple years. It was created because ESPN and Turner split a ridiculous bill on the NBA's rights. But only ESPN got the NBA finals. And so to throw Turner a bone, they're like, look, we know you're never going to get the finals. We don't want to put it on only on TBS or TNT. Instead, what we'll do is we'll create some new content that's non-DVR, but we'll give you the NBA award show. Kind of brilliant. And look, this is just a copy of what ESPN did with the ESPYs. ESPN had all the rights to all these broadcasting, all these sports. There was one dead day in sports where nothing else was going on, right? The day after the Major League Baseball All-Star Game, and they created live content by giving you the ESPYs. It's pretty smart. So why not continue to be smart, and you can have the regular season MVP handed out. You can have the postseason MVP handed out. And you can have a best player in the game award handed out. A best coach in the game handed out. Right? You have those different categories at the Oscars, don't you? You have best actor. You have best... You have all the different kinds of movies, right? And they have their own award. They have best cinematography, best choreography, like all the different awards. But then they have best picture, right? So you know who the best team is in the NBA because they won the title. But who the best player is. And oh yeah, by the way, we shouldn't be voting on it. And you might say, hey, players have an inherent bias. They're going to vote for their teammates. Not if you give every NBA player a vote and every NBA coach a vote. Those are the only guys that put in on the biggest of bigs. Who's the best player in the NBA? And maybe that'll take some shine off of the MVP award, the most valuable player. But why can't we have best in the sport award? Why not? Why can't we? I've said this about the Heisman Trophy. Why is the Heisman Trophy voted on before all the games are played? It's not a regular season or postseason award. It's supposed to be an award given to the best college football player in America. We have these dated ways of doing things. And on some level, we like to evolve. And on some level, we like to devolve. It feels like this is like the all-NBA team that has to include a center. Why? Who are the five best players in the NBA? Those are the guys who should be first-team all-NBA. Shouldn't have to put in a third-team center when one doesn't exist. So if it's me, I look at last night and I'm like, it's a cool celebration of the sport, but a missed opportunity. Look, Major League Baseball has copied this. They had the Major League Baseball Awards, but they have it so late, everybody's forgotten about it. Everybody's forgotten about the regular season, forgotten about what teams do. It's even more pronounced in the NBA. Think about it. In the NBA, the playoffs last 2 months. 2 months. And you're playing at 20-some-odd games. You play 82 games in the regular season. One last thought. Did you guys hear Magic Johnson's speech? I'll play it for you a little bit later. In terms of still kind of not getting the gravity of the moment and what to say and how to say it, Magic Johnson kind of depresses me because he's been a public speaker for years, one who's been championed for his ability to command a room, and he delivered one of the oddest speeches I can ever remember last night. So congrats to Giannis. I do think he was the regular season MVP. I have no problem with him winning it. I don't think he's the best player in the NBA. I don't think anybody would argue with me, but I also don't think it's my place to choose. And for the NBA, who wants to be a forward thinking sport. Why not evolve it? And in addition to having the MVP, give an overall award. Best in the business. BITB. Who's the best in the sport? Or BITS. Who's the best in the sport? LeBron would have won it several years in a row. Durant would have won it probably the last year, maybe 2 years. He might have won it this year. You can't give it to Kawhi because he didn't play 22 regular season games. He got the finals MVP, and then you let the players who know their sport, who watch their sport, who value defense, team play, offense, and the type of dudes a dude a guy is.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at noon Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Clay Travis hosts Outkick the Coverage. That's every morning, 6 a.m. to 9 a.m. Eastern time. That's 3 a.m. to 6 a.m. West Coast time. And, of course, he also is a part of Lock It In. That's the daily gambling show on Fox Sports 1, which I believe right now is on hiatus because of the Women's World Cup. All right, let's get to the controversy where Adam Silver has come out and said, hey, we want to do away with the term owner in the NBA. And this is because Draymond Green said that the word owner elicits thoughts of back in the slave days. I think most people kind of chuckle at this, and then we realize that they're actually serious, Clay. They actually really want to do this. Call people governors instead of calling them owners. Have you been able to get anyone to give you a legit reason that somebody should be offended by the term owner?
Well, I mean, I think it's similar to the same reasons that many of these things exist. And there seems to be an argument that if anybody is offended by anything, we should cease to allow it for anyone else. And of course, the problem with that is people are offended by all sorts of absurd things that aren't worthy of being offended by. And so the inability to distinguish between a company, i.e. an NBA franchise, and its employees, i.e. its players, is nothing less than idiocy. And the fact that people like Adam Silver don't feel comfortable rejecting dumb ideas because they're afraid of, for some way, offending idiots is, I think, how we've ended up in this ridiculous position to begin with in our country.
Yeah, and I do think that it makes it makes people who are kind of in the middle, right? Like, most of the world is gray. Most of the world is not what we see on political TV, which is left and right. Most of the world is pretty much in the center. It makes those of us kind of in the center be like, whoa, wait, what? I do understand sometimes when people can be offended, when people can take things. Well, that's not the context, but I don't see how this in any way relates. Like, yes, you are black. Yes, they will measure you to see how tall you are, how strong you are. But you're being compensated at a wage for a service performed. And by the way, it's an entertainment service. It's not like you're saving anybody's life. It's, you know, like, I don't know. There's just...
Well, it's also the fact, Doug, that everybody at the Combine, for instance, gets their height and weight taken. And then you compete to see who can make the most money by producing the best possible numbers. You know, I mean, look, nobody is demanding that any NBA player actually choose to play basketball. Draymond Green, for instance, is kind of the linchpin, I think, of this idea in general. Right. And he lists that he is an owner of a business in his own Twitter bio. So if the word is that offensive to begin with, can you define yourself by saying you own a company? Because what you're saying there is the same thing that you're arguing against for a team, which is that you own somebody else, which is absurd. I mean, we did a poll, right? Almost 100,000 people voted in it. I don't think there's any more than 7, 8, or 9% of the country that would even identify itself as agreeing with this decision by the NBA. And that's across race, ethnic, religion, everything else. I think people are fed up with stupidity in this country and with people who are perpetually outraged by insignificant stories such as these.
Yeah, but they appear to be trying to go through with this, right? And they've ticked off Mark Cuban. Like, doesn't Michael Jordan own an NBA team? Is he an owner of the Charlotte Hornets? He is, right? And I believe that Kevin Durant and LeBron James have both come out and said one of their goals is to someday own an NBA team.
Look, Magic Johnson said he wants to own society.
Right.
Is to be
your
a part
own boss.
Of the ownership, the universe of the country, right?
Like,
everybody wants to be a homeowner. Many people listening to us right now aspire to be or are small business owners. That's about everybody out there would like to own as big of a company as you possibly can. Now, you will employ people there, but they have the right, thanks to freedoms in America and around the world in many countries, to make a decision about how to make a living. If you don't want to work for someone and make millions of dollars playing basketball, there are tons of other jobs Draymond Green could find that wouldn't pay him anywhere near as much money, by the way. But he's entitled to have that opportunity.
Okay, so do you think this will hurt the popularity of the NBA?
I do. Look, people have asked that question. And I think if you look at the overall numbers, what the NBA needs is casual fans to care about its sport when it gets into the NBA Finals, when it gets into the All-Star Game, the signature events of every American sporting service, right? League, company, whatever you want to say, is predicated on bringing in casual fans. And the NBA, despite the fact that people want to argue otherwise, right now, in this most recent NBA Finals and the last couple of NBA Finals, has been producing about half the audience that Michael Jordan did in 1998. People can say, oh, there's cord cutting, or oh, there's cord streaming, or whatever you want to say, right? The difference is in the 1990s, the NFL, since the 1990s, the NFL audience has gone up.
Yes.
Women's World Cup ratings right now are setting all-time highs. The NHL in Game 7 set an all-time high.
Hold on.
The NBA's down 50%.
Hold on. Like, when you say Women's World Cup, we both work for Fox Sports, and we're both going to watch with France and when the French take on Team USA, but like, what are the numbers for Team USA? What are the numbers for everybody else who's playing?
When the women won the Women's World Cup in 2015, their last couple of games outrated every NBA Finals game this past season. So what I'm comparing it to is the audience that exists for women's soccer or NHL or football are not declining, because the immediate response anytime you say, well, the NBA is 50% as popular as it was in 1998 is, well, nothing is as big as it was in 1998 because there's more television, there's Netflix, there's Amazon Prime, there's all these things. But I say, that's why look at individual sports then and say, okay, people want to say, oh, the NBA is chasing the NFL. The NBA was closer from an audience perspective in the 1980s and 1990s to the NFL than it is today.
Yeah,
I think
that
surprises a lot of people.
No, the NFL struggled in the 90s. Like, people forget when the two LA teams left Los Angeles, there was, you know, Sports Illustrated had a cover about the future of the NFL was very much in doubt. And I would say that fantasy football and, you know, the proliferation of the NFL on TV, like, look, in all honesty, Roger Goodell has done an amazing job. An amazing job. He hasn't added a single game in terms of number of events. He's just, you know, they've created different windows. The overseas window, the Mexican, the game in Mexico, Thursday Night Football, he brought back, he split it up, then he gave it back to, now he gave it to Fox. Like, he's done, they've done an unbelievable job of being the best TV sport, whereas the NBA, I think it's, frankly, it's on too much, and we've started to see that the product isn't always great. And then it's so widely dependent upon, frankly, LeBron. And when LeBron was in the East, now he's in the West, the numbers are down. I guess my question, though, is do you think that the political leanings of the NBA players is at the root of why NBA numbers aren't as good as they should be?
Well, I think there are a couple of issues. One, you hit on it. The regular season doesn't matter. And I think the NBA is in for a real issue with the Raptors winning, because I think this load management concept is going to become more and more commonplace, where in an 82-game season, stars may play 62 games and take off the other 20 because all they know all that matters is the postseason. I think when you try to appeal to a casual viewer, everything matters. And this is the kind of thing where when 90% of the American public disagrees with a decision that you make, it overall devalues your brand. And over time, if you make decisions that 90% of people disagree with, it dilutes your overall audience. Can you point to any one reason? I think it's hard because there are so many multifaceted factors. But I think that any one decision that you make or I make, like if you came on your show every day and you argued for something that only 10% of people agree with, over and over and over again, the same things, people would stop listening. Because people are okay with 50-50. You know what? I agree with Doug today. I disagree with him. Same thing with me. But if we consistently came out with arguments and talked about things that only 10% of people cared about or agreed with, our audiences would collapse. And that would take place over a gradual process. Not like tomorrow. You know what? You always get this probably on Twitter too, because I get it. Oh, I'm never listening to you again. And then, like, if you click that guy's profile, you know, like on social media, you'll go back 6 months ago and he'll say, I'll never listen to you again. It's like amazing how often you make this grand pronouncement. So I don't think any one thing turns people off, but I think it's part and parcel of a larger story that can impact the overall audience.
No, yeah. I mean, it's in all candor, like, I don't know what to, I haven't worked for Jerry Jones, but I do think that Jerry Jones kind of got it, right? With the, you know, people saw them as backing down from the president, and they probably did back down from the president. But it's the old Michael Jordan adage of Republicans buy sneakers too.
My book title,
right? Republicans buy sneakers too. It's like, you know, in your effort to be hip and show your opinion, you can very much be divisive, and there will be people that won't listen to you.
Look, the product is the story, right? Your product in an entertainment age needs to be as good as it possibly can. I think the NBA has got issues with their product, but I also think that feeling like when LeBron, I think Draymond Green compared himself to NBA players to slaves, right? Yeah. I think when you say things like that, you lose an audience. And what you worry about on some level is multimillionaires are already a lot different than the people who are paying their salaries. If you become too disconnected from reality, then your audience vanishes.
I'll give you one. Andre Iguodala has talked about, hey, the Warriors have kind of priced out our fans. Like, he's not wrong. The price has skyrocketed. Now they're moving to San Francisco. There's no way that the average basketball fan in Oakland can afford to go to San Francisco for a game. They just can't. But he does understand that he's part of the problem. He's not simply a bystander in it, right?
Like, yeah, it's smart that he recognizes where this is coming from. But the reason why they've priced out the fan is because they have to pay him and his teammates so much money. And to his credit, he recognizes where his salary comes from. I think old school pro athlete used to understand that.
Like, I don't know if he does. I don't know if he does recognize. Like, look, if it's really a problem and you really want to make a difference, then like you could buy season tickets and give them away or charge what you think is a reasonable rate for it.
Or you could tell everybody in the NBA to make half as much money so fans can come watch games.
That's the other part, though, about like you'll hear NBA people like, man, we need fewer games. And like, you're right. But if you have fewer games, what are you going to do to all of those venues that are depending on 41 nights a year and all of the vendors, all of the people that work there, those same people that you priced out of the seats? Now you're they're not going to work.
Or you're going to charge more. I mean, that would be the easy answer, right?
Like, but even if you charge more, you'll never make up that revenue. You just can't. Even if you cut out 10 days, you charge more, you just won't make up the revenue out of sheer volume. It's the same thing I've discussed, like the NCAA, the Final Four. They play in domes, like 75,000 seats, right? Is it great to watch a game there? Most seats? No, it's not. So why don't they play in an arena that seats 22,000 and jack up the prices? Because do you know how high the prices would have to be jacked up just to get anywhere near the money that they're making, right? Do the math on a piece of paper and you're like, there's no possible way they'll ever move out of a dome.
Yeah,
right?
It's interesting, right? I mean, and it also gets into how aggressive you make plans to figure out money. Like I've argued, we have 20 minutes of ads on our radio show every day. Why don't we have 10 minutes of ads and charge twice as much money for the 10 minutes that we run? Or the same thing with the NFL, right? Like, why can't I watch a football game in 2 hours and 10 minutes instead of 3 hours and 10 minutes? Well, we could have an hour less ads, and the game could actually take place quicker, much like happens when you sit down and watch a soccer match.
And they put the ad on the field. Right?
Now, it's challenging, right? But to me, if you tell somebody, hey, you're the only person who's going to be able to buy ads today on the U.S. versus, who are they playing, France on Friday. Uh-huh. That's a big opportunity, not only because you get the opportunity to advertise to your audience, but every other company doesn't get that opportunity.
Yeah, it feels like there's unintended consequences there. This feels like the flat tax discussion, right? You're like, why don't we just have flat tax? Everybody pays 20%, and we go about our business. And you're like, yeah, well, what do you do with all the accountants? Are there no more deductibles? What do you do with people who don't actually make any money? You're going to charge them 20%. They make, 40 grand a year. You're going to charge them 20%.
Well, I mean, I think, yeah, the answer is, in general, like, all these companies are predicated on buying ads the same way that they do now.
Right.
And if you suddenly go to them and say, hey, we're going to charge you 10 times as much, their eyes kind of bug out and they don't understand it. But, that's why you create disruptive opportunities in society, like podcasts.
Yes.
You'll listen to a podcast, it's an hour long, you might get 3 minutes of ads.
No, I get it, but what you missed out on, like, we were actually just talking about this, I was talking about the NBA Awards, how they need to evolve, like, because they don't have history there, like, why do they have to have a regular season MVP when we knew Giannis wasn't the best player on the court when they lost to Toronto, right? It's such a dated idea that they should have the regular season MVP, then they should have, like, a best player in the sport award, and have the players and coaches kind of all vote on it. But I said, like, look, that's like podcast and terrestrial radio. The advantage we have in radio and your radio show and my radio show is something happens, we can immediately react to it. Something happens, you can record a podcast live. It is not live at that moment. It has to be edited. It has to be blasted out. It takes time, and then it'll forever be dated as opposed to the evolving radio show. So,
yeah, look, which is why the argument, which I think it was smart, Reed Hastings has made about Netflix, and it's the move that Fox has made in general. He thinks television is ultimately almost exclusively going to be live sports. You have to see it right now. Uh-huh. Or news.
Or award shows.
Yeah, or award shows to a certain extent, right? But I mean, really, it has to be live. It has to be occurring right now, or people won't make time for it.
Hmm. All right, great stuff, dude. One last thing here, and this is kind of the most important thing. You realize we're co-hosting the Dan Patrick Show on the 4th of July.
Well, unless the Dan Patrick Show come to their senses and decide to block me or you or the two of us being together. But yeah, I'm going to be out in L.A. I'm flying out on Sunday. So we are in studio in Sherman Oaks on Thursday, July 4th, I believe.
Yeah,
right?
which could be a huge free agent. I was working 3 years ago when Kevin Durant decided to become a Warrior. We'll see what Kevin Durant thinks. We'll see what Kyrie Irving thinks. What they want to do and how that affects kind of the NBA, which we're still talking about. If you were Kawhi Leonard, what would you do?
I don't. First of all, nobody.
I would move to Nashville. No, you can't move to Nashville.
I don't think anybody knows. First of all, let me say this: there's nothing more American than mom, apple pie, and you and me on July 4th. So that should be a lot of fun for the nation. I don't know what Kawhi Leonard is motivated by other than winning games. If winning games is all that matters to him, I think the Raptors are probably better than the Clippers are right now. So if winning games is all that matters, then I would stay in Toronto. If he is a guy who truly cares about going back home and being close to Southern California and that matters to him a great deal, then he should go to the Clippers because he's already got two titles and he's built himself and bought himself the opportunity to make any choice that makes him the most happy. So I would do whatever he thinks is going to make him the happiest at this point.
It's a hard call, though, right? I mean, to decide to move back home or to stay somewhere they love you, but you've only actually been there for like 7 or 8 months, and this is the best. This is literally the best they will ever get in Toronto. There's no... You win next year, it's not as good as it is this year. You don't win next year, it's not as good. There are naysayers. And this is the best the weather will ever be. This is the nicest people will ever be. Canadians are super nice, but this is like the best of, this is like a recruiting visit. Or this is like being on The Bachelorette. Right? Like,
yeah.
This is not really how real life works.
And also, you're going to make $100 million plus wherever you go, which really kind of brings home again, there ain't a bad decision. Like, I don't know about you, but if somebody offered me $100 million, I'd move to any city in America or the world and do daily radio. So I think most of our listeners probably would as well. So
which would be the hardest city to move to?
I think you have to make it like a pro sports franchise city, right? Okay. You can't just say like, oh, you're going to have to move to Gary, Indiana or
Okay.
I would say the place that I would least like to move that has a pro sports franchise right now might be Toronto. I'm going to be honest. I don't want to leave America. I think it's a great city, but it's freezing. My wife is from Detroit. I think a lot of people would say they wouldn't want to go to Detroit.
I have friends that actually have moved to Detroit, and outside of Detroit, and great suburbs.
I got married outside of Detroit in Oakland County. It's beautiful.
Right. Now, if they tell you you have to live in downtown Detroit, I think Detroit is first in the list.
Even downtown Detroit now has become nice there are certain areas of it that are really nice now. They've got all the pro sports located right downtown. You could be like 5 minutes from work. I don't think the weather would be awful, but I think a lot of people would say Detroit. I would knock it out because I have family there. So Toronto might be my choice.
Give me the one in the States. Make one city in America hate you. I think Milwaukee's wildly underrated.
I've never really spent any time in Milwaukee. It would be near the top of my list of places I would not want to live.
It's also like only an hour and a half from Chicago. Baltimore is cool, but The Wire does feel very real.
Yeah, and I've spent a lot of time in the Baltimore area because I went to college in D.C., and there are really nice parts of Baltimore. It's not like, you know, you're going to get, you know, shot on the street corner or something because you're in The Wire. You know,
Cleveland?
There are plus, you're really accessible to D.C. You're not far from Philly, New York, even Boston. Like, the East Coast, I don't love the vibe, but it's easy to move around in that Bosnia, New York, D.C. corridor. I think Buffalo might be my answer. As much as I appreciate the people of Buffalo, like, it's pretty middle of nowhere up in Buffalo. It snows all the time.
Yep.
You have teams that never win titles, right? So you'd be talking, you got to think about the teams you'd be talking about. Do I want to talk about the Buffalo Sabres and the Buffalo Bills every day for 3 or 4
Bills
hours?
Bills Mafia make it fun, but I generally agree with you.
I think Buffalo would probably be my choice. I'm sorry, Buffalo.
Clay Travis, he apologizes for trashing Buffalo and saying that downtown Detroit is actually a lovely place to live. You can hear Outkick the coverage every morning, 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern Time. And of course, see Lock It In. Every afternoon on Fox Sports 1, and listen to on the Dan Patrick Show with yours truly on the 4th of July. See you soon. Thanks for joining us.
All right. Appreciate it, my man. I'll see you.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at noon Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific.
There's an expression, you can never go home again. Right? You can't go home again. And the idea is that though we change and we evolve and we grow up and we mature, it's really hard for people to get out of their own mind who you were if there's some negative feelings before you left, right? And no place is that more obvious than something like the NBA and the idea that D'Angelo Russell is going to have a meeting with the Lakers. We're told D'Angelo Russell has matured. We're told D'Angelo Russell has evolved. We're told he's a completely different guy than the one who sold out Swaggy P on social media, than the one who got run out of town after being the number 2 overall pick from the Lakers. He's totally different. So he's going to conduct an interview with the Lakers. Can I ask you something? The Nets had a successful season, correct? Yeah. They went to the playoffs. They were a surprise team in the playoffs. He had a surprisingly, remarkably productive year, and he was named an all-star replacement. They didn't have another all-star on the team. They need a point guard. They're apparently in search of Kyrie Irving. And you could say to me, well, you know, Kyrie's won an NBA title, so that's why they want Kyrie more. But how come he's not meeting with the Nets? Right? Like, if he's that good, if he's that impactful, Why aren't the Nets the favorite to land D'Angelo Russell? Yeah, answer that question? And the answer is, not all that glitters is gold. I think D'Angelo Russell is fool's gold. I just do. Like, you take him out of L.A., and he's a high-volume shooter. And though he had some unbelievable performances with the Nets, like, he was in the perfect situation. The perfect situation. Playing with a team which values threes, playing with a team which let him kind of do whatever, playing with a team full of guys that are kind of overachievers, and covered for his weaknesses at the defensive end. And then, you know, they had Spencer Dinwiddie, who was solid and also a really good shooter. But were they great? No. Did they beat the elite teams? No. And if he was so good, why wouldn't the Nets want him instead of changing and taking Kyrie Irving when Kyrie has this baggage on his name? Right? I mean, Kyrie has an injury history. Kyrie's older. Kyrie's burned bridges. Kyrie is, he'll make more money. He'll demand more money. You know, unlike D'Angelo Russell, D'Angelo Russell will come out of the game and not complain about it when Spencer Dinwiddie comes in. That's not going to happen with Kyrie Irving. So why wouldn't they be front runners in order to get D'Angelo Russell? I think you have your answer. In addition to which, if he is to meet with the Lakers, does he walk in and do the Happy Gilmore? Is that what he does?
I'm stupid. You're smart. I was wrong. You were right. You're the best. I'm the worst. You're very good looking. I'm not attractive.
All right. That's enough, D'Angelo. Do you really think an NBA free agent who is named a all-star replacement is going to come in hat in hand and do the Happy Gilmore? Probably not. Or what if Rob Pelinka does the Rocky IV?
If I can change.
Я думаю, что каждый тоже изменился сегодня.
And you can change.
Вы можете измениться.
Everybody can change.
Right? If I can change, you can change, everybody can change. I don't see it. I see D'Angelo struggling to get the money that he wants from the Nets or from anywhere else, and he looks at the Lakers as being desperate. But to go back into the same building, and granted, management has changed, coaching staff has been completely turned over, and say, hey, I'm a different guy. It's been 2 years. That's a tough pill to swallow. That's a tough one. And no NBA player is going to walk in hat in hand and say, I'm stupid, you're smart, I'm ugly, you're good looking. So do I believe D'Angelo Russell will meet with the Lakers? Sure. Do I believe he'll sign with the Lakers? I don't. Because the Lakers are looking around going, look, Kyrie Irving has a bad rap right now. And I would guess that the Celtics would still take him back. Just he doesn't want to meet with them. Whereas D'Angelo Russell, not even really discussed in the Nets' plans.